Sometimes something happens to a person that is so awful that what they need the most at the outset is support and a friendly ear. In a perfect world, that is how it would always work out, but this isn't a perfect world. And when things don't go the way they should, a strong person stands up. She stands up for herself and for others in the same position. Even when the road becomes more difficult, her fight continues. I'm John Kiriakou. Welcome to The Whistleblowers. One of the most traumatic and damaging things that a person can experience is a sexual assault. The loss of a sense of safety, the distrust of one's surroundings, and the palpable fear that it could happen again are almost too much to handle. What assault victims need is support, the help and cooperation of law enforcement, a friendly ear, perhaps even a psychologist or psychiatrist to help the victim work her way through the experience. But what happens when that system breaks down? What happens when a company that has a role in the protection of the victim acts in an unethical or perhaps even illegal way? That's when whistles are blown. Nicole Stevens was a victim of a violent assault where she was raped and strangled nearly to death. Her injuries were so severe that she was placed on medical disability. Through that experience, she was and continues to be treated with dignity and respect by her insurer, Capital Alliance, which is a part of South Africa's largest insurer called Liberty Group. During the course of her disability, Nicole became a domestic violence and civil society activist. In 2020, another victim of assault reached out to her to ask for her help in processing a disability claim with the insurance company Discovery Life. She met with the company's legal director and a forensic investigator and was able to help her client receive his disability payment. The company's treatment of this client, however, was unacceptable, and Nicole believed that it was unethical and possibly illegal as well. Nicole then sought out other victims via social media, finding that many of them experienced the same unethical and illegal behavior at the hands of Discovery. She now represents 7 clients as an advocate, and she's assisting another 12 people in a class action suit. You're probably asking what this unethical and illegal behavior is. Well, simply put, it's fraud. Many of the victims have put their trust in Discovery and many invested their life savings. The funds were invested with Discovery Invest, the company's investment arm. The broker with whom the funds were invested was warned repeatedly that his work was not compliant with the law. But instead of correcting course, that broker disappeared, and he took all of his victims' money with him. Criminal and civil actions are currently pending. Nicole now holds online domestic violence support group meetings that are open to all. She also assists victims in obtaining orders of protection, exit plans, and other domestic violence support. And she does all of this for free. She knows firsthand when a victim needs that friendly face. Nicole Stevens, thank you so much for being with us. We're happy to have you.
Thank you so much, John, for having me as one of your guests. It is truly an honor.
Nicole, let's start with the event, I'm going to assume, changed the course of the rest of your life. Can you tell us what happened to you and how it motivated you to help others in need?
Yes, sure. John, I was the area manager of an international retailer, and I was in a domestic violence assault where I was raped and strangled almost to death. I do suffer from PTSD still, and it still makes me very overwhelmed talking about it. What happened was over the coming months after the assault, the wheels at work started falling off, and I basically lost my memory. One of the incidences was I was driving on the highway, and I literally stopped on the highway, not knowing where I was, where I was going, and that in itself is traumatic. So I sought the services of specialists like neurologists and other specialists to try and figure out what was wrong with me. although I'd been assaulted, I had blocked the entire incident out of my mind. So at that time, I didn't know what was going on with me. So I was going through the motions of seeing specialists to find out why I couldn't recall words. Memory was gone. And I was subsequently diagnosed with pseudo-dementia, which is a type of dementia that is brought on by severe depression. And during that time, I was then placed on temporary disability. A few months after that, the physical trauma and the damage started to rear its ugly head. I suffered multiple level spine damage from my cervical, thoracic, lumbar, sacral. There were moments of bowel and bladder incontinence. I would just lose control, as well as sporadic episodes of paralysis from the waist down. So it was the mental health, the psychological trauma, and thereafter it was the physical trauma that came. It was during this period that, because of the trauma, I was having a lot of vertigo, and I'd fallen, and my neighbor offered to take me to the hospital for knee surgery. And my neighbor said to me, no more climbing over the railing, in the recovery when I was in the ward. And I looked at her and I said to her, what are you talking about? And she actually explained to me the assault and how she saved my life. And it was as if I'd relived the entire trauma again. Over the years, the memories have come back, and this year, 99% of them have been restored. I think I've become a Christian again, and I think it's the Lord's way of protecting me for those 4 years to heal psychologically and possibly physically, although I do suffer, in order to get me to this place where I can be of service to other people in similar situations.
You had a positive experience when dealing with Liberty Group, the big insurance company. Did it occur to you at the time that you were having your case processed that there were a lot of other people out there who were not having a positive experience? What made you get involved with insurance companies? Was it when that first client approached you?
During the entire process, from the first day I was booked off and hospitalized till last year, July, when the insurance company, and it's one of the largest, if not the best, in South Africa, Liberty Group, they concluded it was permanent and it's now been approved up until retirement or death, whichever is the earlier. Never once did I ever realize that other people were going through, obviously I was going through my trauma. I was being treated with the utmost dignity and respect and compassion. And during my time in my disability, I then became a gender-based violence activist. And through social media, somebody approached me and said that he was in a 4-year claim process with Discovery Life. And when he explained to me what he had gone through, I was in complete disbelief because it was not what I had been accustomed to, and it was not my experience. And in one of my LinkedIn posts, I actually refer to it as a mafia movie, because it has all the trimmings of a mafia movie in how Discovery Life have dealt with their disability claims, from fraudulent documentation, a fake death certificate that they supplied a hospital in order to get medical records for, to bribing, extortion, human rights violations. So my experience was completely different to when I was first approached.
The experiences that your clients have had with Discovery were certainly not like your own experience at Liberty Group. What you've described happening there, quite simply, is a Ponzi scheme. And there were warnings that that was what was happening. Tell us how this happened and what are the criminal and civil actions being taken to correct it?
What I also came to believe is through a group of 12 investors who invested their life savings, some of them who went on retirement, gave their pension over and invested with the broker of Discovery Invest. It's the same company, just a different division, like Discovery Life. The warning signs were there for Discovery, and yet they blatantly ignored it. They were the broker that these clients dealt with. His documentation has to be in accordance with certain legislative requirements in terms of compliance on documentation that is needed to be filled out, etc., etc. And this broker was warned numerous times that his commission would be stopped if he didn't get his house in order. With the fraud group, it really, really, I get angry because with my abuse, I don't take kindly to any type of abuse, whether it's spousal, partner, corporate. I've got a major problem with. And when it came to Discovery investigating the case of the investments, it was brought to their attention in December 2021 on numerous occasions, again in January 2022. I might be correct, I stand to be corrected. It might be December 2020 into January 2021. The forensic investigator only visited this client who had tried to get information about his money. This investigator only saw this client in February, and it was clear from the outset that the broker had run away with their funds. And it wasn't just the one, it was many others, the total of which is approximately 18 million rand. So in the exchange rate, it's probably about $1 million. Discovery only opened criminal charges in May, some 3 or 4 months later. It was just the lackadaisical manner in which they dealt with the broker. They never locked down his office. They didn't confiscate any of his documentation. They didn't call in the police services immediately, where they could have done a full forensic audit, taken his laptops, all of that. Nothing was done. It was done months later. And unfortunately, to this day, this broker is still free and he hasn't been arrested. I am going to take further administrative action against the investigation because I feel that it's definitely failed these investors. Some of them have been left on government grants, which is a measly 1,800 rand a month in which to live. So it's devastating what has taken place.
It seems to me, Nicole, that without a formal structure behind you, it would be easy to get lost in the number of people who need help. You're helping these people out of the goodness of your heart.
John, I have to deal with my health first, and I'm so fortunate in order to earn an income because of my disability and what I went through. And that has put me in this position in order to help people free of charge. I don't charge anything. It does become overwhelming, especially on those really tough days for me with my health. Fortunately, Discovery's clients that I'm assisting are well aware of my issues and my health concerns, and they're very supportive. I'll work flat out in one day and I'll be man down for a week and I won't be able to do much. It would take me that long to recover. So it's as and when, and also I'm reliant on the judicial system. So when I receive communications, I have to act. And sometimes it's on a good day and sometimes it's on a bad day. It is overwhelming, yes.
Nicole, please stay with us. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the broader scene for whistleblowing in South Africa. Stay tuned. Welcome back to The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We're speaking with Nicole Stevens, a whistleblower from South Africa who drew strength from a terrible incident of domestic violence and used that experience to help others. Good to have you with us, Nicole.
Thank you, John.
I wanted to ask you a general question about whistleblowing in South Africa. We've actually had more than several South African whistleblowers here on the show, and one of the complaints that they have that is consistent is that there is not only little governmental support for whistleblowers, but the government is sometimes so hostile toward whistleblowers as to make the situation personally dangerous for them. Has that been your experience at all, or have you received government support for what you do?
That's a great question, John. Being a whistleblower for another division of Discovery Limited is the Discovery Health, and it's not a case I can discuss because it is confidential at this stage and it is still very sensitive. But I've been extremely fortunate to have the regulatory body that oversees the medical schemes in South Africa. I've had not only their support, but I've had the SIU, Special Investigations Unit, the NPA, the National Prosecution Authority, as well as other government bodies. Supporting me 100%, in fact, 150%. I've been extremely blessed to have the people working with me on that whistleblowing case. When it comes to the Discovery Life, my opinion is that there is a rogue unit operating within Discovery Life because they do not care for anything within the law. They operate on their own terms and conditions. They use covert and overt surveillance on their disability clients, and this is after they've cancelled the contract. They have even used police members to do their surveillance on their own clients, which is absolutely disgraceful. So what I've done is with the disability group is we've now gone and reported the police to the regulatory body, which is like your IA, your independent IA, sorry. There we go, thank you. Internal Affairs, so ours is IPED. It's the Independent Directorate of investigation. Sorry, I'm at a loss for words. This is my cognitive thinking. IPED is the regulatory body for the police services here, and it's been really tough because we've had an investigator with IPED investigating these cases against Discovery, and we have now found that the executive director of IPED is now colluding with Discovery Life in charging this investigator with investigating these charges of the policeman doing Discovery's work in terms of the surveillance. So what I have done is I have now reported this to the Parliamentary Committee for Policing, as well as the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, as well as the Reserve Bank. And they all oversee the insurance industry, as well as the policing on that side.
Another issue that's been consistent among South African whistleblowers is that prosecutors have not bought into the idea that whistleblowers are exposing violations of the law. And oftentimes, the whistleblowers find themselves in legal jeopardy when they go public. In fact, some of them have had to go into hiding or have had to leave the country. Have you experienced any of this kind of retaliation?
With my experience, we've had the prosecutors on board. The problem is that Discovery seemed to insinuate themselves into the investigations at some level of the investigation or the prosecution. I can't say the prosecution because that is unfounded at this stage. But, sorry, I've lost my train of thought. In terms of they have absolutely been on board. In terms of retaliation, for me, has actually been directly from Discovery Life and Discovery Health. I've received an attorney's letter warning me to refrain, to which I have responded, stating that what I speak of is actually factual and cannot be seen as any type of defamation. It is all in the public space. Whether it's court judgments of that nature, rulings from the ombudsman. I've had overt threats as well of my life, which I have been in touch with the witness program, witness protection program. We have spoken about it. At this stage, I don't feel it's necessary, as I still have a child who is at home. I know that sounds a bit strange, but the threat is not viable for me to go into witness protection at this stage.
What kind of support have you and other South African whistleblowers received from whistleblower organizations? Here in the United States, we're fortunate to have things like the National Whistleblower Center, Whistleblowers of America, the Government Accountability Project, and myriad other organizations for support. In Europe, there are also a lot of similar organizations. But what's the situation in South Africa? Who would you turn to for support?
John, that's a really great question. You know, with the likes of Cynthia Stimple, June Bellamy, Ethel Williams, they would... And whistleblowers in general would approach the whistleblower's house, who is equipped to deal and to support whistleblowers, whether it be for legal representation or accommodation, loss of income because of loss of work, because of the whistleblowing. So we have the whistleblower's house, which is a great organization. They really do great work.
Finally, Nicole, what advice would you give to whistleblowers and to would-be whistleblowers who come to you for guidance? How can they protect their interests?
The biggest obstacle a whistleblower has is to take the information that they have and to follow the route of the legal route. So my advice would be to seek the advice of an attorney, number one, and to seek out the relevant regulatory bodies who are there to protect them as well as to enforce the law. So to typically be protected on the legal side and also to be aware of your surroundings, because you never know whose toes you're stepping on and what threats there are out there.
Nicole, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story. It's stories like these that we live to tell to help bring clarity and, more importantly, healing. Thank you. Khalil Gibran, the great Egyptian writer and philosopher, once said, quote, "You give but little when you give of your possessions. It is when you give of yourself that you truly give." And Pablo Picasso, arguably the greatest artist of the 20th century, said that, quote, "The meaning of life is to find your gift, but the purpose of life is to give it away." I want to thank our guest, Nicole Stevens, for joining us today and for her strength and heroism in helping others. And thanks to our viewers for joining us for another episode of The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We'll see you next time.